Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You are listening to a community session. I am your host today, Erin Fairbanks, and we are coming to you live from the back of Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today, we are in the studio with food healer Celia Kutcher. Celia, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back.
So last time we had you here, we were talking about feeding your pets, kind of basics. And today, we brought you back because we want to kind of continue this conversation, but looking a little bit more at how do you keep a healthy pet, healing your pet, and some kind of basic treatments or approaches for pets, you know, mood issues or physical ailments. So for the folks who maybe didn't get a chance to tune in to the last episode, you can definitely find it, like all of our programs, archived on the website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. But maybe we'll start, Celia, by giving folks a little bit of your background and explanation of what exactly it is you do and why folks should be listening to you.
Sure. I come from a background of, for starters, having a lot of pets as a child, and I was also a competitive athlete in the hunter-jumper world, which is horses. And when I was at a lot of different barns, one of the things that one of the places did was used alternative remedies and nutrients and things to keep their horses quiet, because you can't give them drugs because you'll get fined and you'll be banned. So from there, it kind of opened up all these questions and the realization that food can really make a difference to mood, behavior, and general well-being of animals. And from there, I started studying with some of the really, really old school people that have this information that it's impossible to get. It's really dying out now, which is very sad. But things like the ability to cure a leg injury on a horse with a piece of cabbage, things like that. So I was fortunate enough to study with a lot of those people. And from there, a lot of my own self-studying through a lot of books and a lot of research. I went to the Institute of Integrative Nutrition, and I am a certified holistic health counselor, because there really is no animal nutrition program at this point or a degree in it that I really agree with. A lot of them are sponsored by big retailers and things like that, so I'm a little skeptical regarding them. I'm also a Bach Flower registered animal practitioner. I'm one of about 15 people in this country with that title right now. It comes out of the UK, and the Bach Flowers really work on emotional issues. So it's through all of that and research, and really a lot of it is talking to old timers that have just this precious information that just keeps sliding away because no one's written it down, is where really I've gotten the majority of my information.
Nice. Well, so I know for pets, much like for humans, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So I want to start off by talking a little bit about what, you know, what should be kind of the annual, or is it even annual, kind of health lineup for your pets? And when we say pets, you know, we're kind of talking about general household pets, dogs, cats. What else should we be including in the discussion today?
You can do rodents. I mean, gerbils, hamsters, rabbits, turtles, reptiles. I have to admit that I'm not really that big of a fan of people owning reptiles unless they do a lot of research, because one of the problems with pet stores is they really don't teach you how to create the correct environment for animals. So a lot of reptiles really suffer just because it's ignorance of humans. And we just don't really know. It's good intentions by getting them, but I didn't really work that much with reptiles, so this one is really going to be more rodents and dogs and cats and horses too, actually.
Okay, great. And also we're going to be kind of talking in generalities today. Of course, if your pet has a specific, you know, issue, or if you're concerned about something specific to your pet, we definitely encourage you to seek out the help of someone who's trained, a trained professional. And today we're really just going to look at giving you an overview of some general advice and some general kind of treatments and potential kind of cures. So back to my question, what should be kind of on the general gamut? I'm a pet owner, you know, I have a new dog. What should I be planning on in an annual or biannual basis for appropriate care of my animal?
Well, the first thing to do is whenever you get an animal, whether it's a rescue or a puppy, kitten, baby of some sort, you really, really need to go to a vet. And that's whether you got it from a breeder, whether you got it from a pet store, whether it's an adoption agency, anything like that. You really want to make sure that all their vaccines are up to date, or if they haven't gotten them yet, to start giving them the vaccines. Running stool tests to make sure that they don't have any worms, that kind of thing. And it's blood work is really, really crucial. It can be expensive, which is the bad news. However, dogs and cats, and actually all animals, if they get sick, it reacts much, much more quickly than it does to us. So, for example, if an animal gets cancer, within 3 months, it could be very, very bad, and it could be life-threatening. With us, in most cases, 3 months is enough time for a tumor to grow, but in most cases, it's not life-threatening at that point. So you're talking find yourself a good vet that you like. The best way to do that is ask everybody that you know that has pets, and really listen to the good, the bad, and the ugly. I mean, Yelp exists now, which is great in many cases. However, you really have to follow your gut and find a vet that you really like and that you really, really trust, because that is absolutely the most important thing. Just because they're super expensive doesn't mean they're going to be much better. Same on the other side, though. If someone is extraordinarily cheap, pay attention during that appointment and make sure they are someone that you really like. So annually, you should do a stool sample, you should do blood work, and you should just bring them in for a checkup so they can look at everything from, you know, nose to tail and make sure that that's okay. Once your pet hits about middle age, for dogs and cats, that's about 8. Then you should probably be getting blood work twice a year, especially if issues are starting to come up. Because if you have your blood work, then we can really, really see what's happening in a timely manner and see the progression of things as well.
And so, I mean, I know for myself, like when I go to the doctor, I walk in and for whatever reason, being in that little room, the door shuts, the doctor comes in, and all of my kind of like confidence and questions go out the window. And I do a lot of like nodding and agreeing. And I'm sure it's probably similar for pet owners. You're there, you know, there's this expectation of deference to the expert. So what do you recommend as far as people kind of coming in, and should we, you know, write down a list of questions and what some of those things might be so that we're really prepared once we get into the room, especially for pets, because, you know, for our own health issues, I think we may have a tendency to be a little more in tune, or we just have more experience because we've been human our whole life, than to even know kind of what to ask for your pet. I mean, is there a kind of a general slew of things you should be making, or a checklist that we can look to, or anything like that that you'd recommend?
I mean, I think making a list is great, because when I go to the doctor for myself, I freak out. I mean, I am totally useless. I don't remember anything. I'm a nervous wreck. And so when you're in a vet's office, in many cases, especially with like the smaller pets, like cats and rodents and that kind of thing, it can be really nerve-wracking. And when you're in there and there's all this stuff going on, most of the time, clients will forget what they're asking. So making a list is great, because also if you find a vet that'll take the time for you to go through that whole list and explain things to you in a normal human manner and not a veterinary manner, you found someone really good. So I think that that's a good way to check on both. Excuse me. I also think that it's really, really important to, before you go in, you can always do yourself a huge favor. Bring a stool sample, because they're going to ask you for one anyway. You don't need to bring urine. If there is some kind of problem in the urinary tract, you'll have to get that later, and that's a pain in the neck, so don't even waste your time with that. But you should really come in with some stool. If you want to be really good, depending on where you are, write down the foods that you're feeding and whether they're wet or dry, and if you're doing any other supplementation at all. Because all this information will go into the health history and really help the vets also see where you're from. Because if you're someone who's very, very holistic and likes using a lot of alternative medicine, chances are you're not going to be a huge buyer for steroids or something like that unless it's really, really severe. So it lets the vet also be a little bit more comfortable with you, because then he knows where you're coming from, or where he or she will find out where you're coming from at that point, so they can create something that's a little more customized towards you.
That makes sense. So now that we've got kind of basic preventative care out of the way, and for folks who are looking for kind of more general dietary advice, definitely check out Celia's last show here on the radio network. I want to talk a little bit about some of these kind of mood and physical ailments and what people can do to, think about some alternative ways of dealing with them. So maybe let's start with some of the mood aspects. You know, we talked a little bit about, separation anxiety, both the animals from their parents, but also the animals from their owner, housebreaking issues, trauma. You know, what are some ways to identify mood issues, and what are some kind of common tools that folks can look to ease some of these ailments in their pets?
Well, the primary way that you really see if something's going on is if your pet starts acting strangely. People didn't really realize until about 20 years ago how emotionally in tune animals are. I mean, to think that human beings are the only people or the only organisms that can feel pain and that actually have emotional reactions is really ridiculous. I mean, if you're looking in terms of, like, we're all mammals pretty much, you know, with the exception of the reptiles. But so it's really important to realize that your animals do have feelings and do react to things and do react to, you know, your actions as well as other actions. Something as simple as, you know, if you have a nervous pet and you live on a very busy road with trucks, just even that is enough to really set them off because they're so much more sensitive than we are. The problem with like cats and rabbits is that they're really, really asymptomatic. So with dogs, if they get hurt, you know, they'll stub a toe and you know in a minute because it's high drama. And, oh, my God, stubbed a toe. I'm lame. I can't walk. That kind of thing. Where cats are like, oh, no, really, I'm fine. And then they just kind of fall over and you're like, oh, my God, what just happened to you? So it's really, really important to spend time with your pets every day and really know who they are and their personalities are. Because trauma in pets is so much bigger than what we expect it to be. You know, if something terrible happens to us, we're able to talk to people about it and get help through that way. And, you know, it's pretty obvious if someone's been traumatized. Where in a lot of cases with animals, especially like rescues that have been traumatized over years, they wind up living in that state of trauma. So they don't even know that they're there. So it really takes a keen eye to see what's going on. And I mean, you'll know, you know, because it's things like shying away or crying or constant licking. That's a big one. Lick, lick, lick all the time, even to the point where the hair comes off and you get bald spots. In some cases, that's an allergic reaction, but in other cases, that's just an emotional way for them to soothe and relax themselves. Sleep differences. If you have a cat that we used to call it at the vet's office, the midnight crazies, where a really chill cat, everything's good, about midnight to about 3 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden they're bananas and they're running around the house and they're screaming and yelling and you're just like, what is going on? That can actually indicate a thyroid issue. So these kind of behaviors are really, really important to see because there are times where animals can be OCD as well. We had a client whose dog couldn't stop spinning. And it would spin to the left and spin to the left and spin to the left and spin to the left. And it was like it was going to lie down. It was just trying to get comfortable. But it would become this, basically like this routine. And he'd do it for anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute. And it was like, what is this? So he took the dog and x-rayed it just to make sure it wasn't something spinal and all this. And basically what it turned out was the dog had OCD. And this is pretty common in especially like the fancy breeds and in the little breeds, like the poofy dogs, as I call them. A lot of them have a lot of emotional upset because they're little and people think they're a toy, so they pick them up all the time and they don't let them basically become dogs. So, I mean, something as simple as that can be really difficult for a cat or a dog. And I had a cat client who wouldn't use a litter box and was using a litter box fine and one day stopped using the litter box. So they came to the vet and we did a urinary tract test and we checked for crystals and all the physical aspects of it. And that was all fine. Couldn't figure out what was going on. So I finally went over to the house and what they had done was they were rescued another cat. So they'd separated the litter boxes and the house cat's litter box was literally right by the front door. So the cat was terrified to go to the bathroom because it was, you know, you're exposing yourself at your most vulnerable point. And at this point, there can be people walking in and out. I mean, it's the same way as, I mean, I wouldn't want to use a bathroom that was right by my front door, you know, with no door on it. So things like that can really be, for us, it's like, well, it's a convenience spot for the litter box, but for cats can be mind-boggling. So just being a little bit more conscious. I mean, people will say, think like your pet. I mean, if you can do that, more power to you. That's a really tough one. And I mean, that's, you know, I'm not psychic and I know my pets well because I spend an awful lot of time with them. So that's the way to do it. And, you know, just sometimes we have bad days, sometimes pets have bad days. So if it goes on for a day or two, make a note of it. If it goes on longer than that, then you're probably going to want to talk to a vet or you can talk to me or someone who works with Bach flowers just to start rolling. Because the longer you leave this and ignore it and just kind of leave it alone, the worse it's going to get.
Okay, so that, I mean, you answered my next question there, which was how long should we wait before kind of seeking treatment? So it sounds like, you know, a couple of days of abnormal behavior, mm-hmm. probably, you know, potentially nothing could be wrong, maybe something could, but once you get past the like 5 to 7 day period,
that's bad. Then you should
be kind of looking to address something.
Yeah, Ben, and the one thing is with cats, dogs can fast for a few days, but if a cat goes off its food, if your cat doesn't eat for 24 hours, you need to go to the vet immediately, because cats can slip into anorexia literally overnight. And if they don't eat within a 24 hour period, it starts that process. And once a cat becomes anorexic, it's very, very difficult to get them to start eating again. So that can be life threatening. Dogs, you can let them go 2 days, 3 days at the most, you know?
Okay. So we are going to move to just a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk about some ways, once you've identified some of these ailments, to look at some treatment options. So hang tight. We are in the studio with Celia Kutcher, food healer, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Oh Lord by Eula on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the Heritage Radio. This is a community session, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are in studio with food healer Celia Kutcher talking about treating some common ailments of your pets. And so before the break, Celia, you were taking us through some of the ways to identify some different issues that may be impacting your pet's mood. So what I want to tuck into now is, you know, okay, you've identified that your pet is having an issue. What are some ways that you might recommend kind of responding to these issues?
Well, so it really depends what the issue is. But one thing that was really, really common that I work with all the time is like constipation. Constipation exists for lots of different reasons. A lot of times it's because they're feeding only dry food. Some animals cling on to things, same as people. Like very, very tense people or animals tend to be constipated because they put your body in a little bit of a state of panic a lot of the time. So everything kind of constricts. So with that, you know, we'd see lots of people or lots of clients at the vet's office with pets with constipation. And when it was ruled out that it wasn't a blockage or something like that, there's a lot of different ways that you can deal with that problem. One of the ones that is my absolute favorite is getting some probiotics. And probiotics you can find in your health food store. I like the human-based ones. The one thing to be aware of is that human-based probiotics do not carry one strain of bacteria, which is called Enterococcus faecium. That's really for pets. However, what I've found is if you find a really good probiotic that's a blend of different bacterias from the refrigerator, not freeze-dried, it's going to cover a lot of those problems. And what it really does help with is it helps to move everything along because it creates better bacteria in the gut. There's a bunch of different ways to cure it. I mean, you can also use slippery elm bark or coconut oil, which both lubricate the system. You know, simple problems have a lot of different solutions, which is what I really like about it. So if something doesn't work for you, there are other options. I don't believe that there is a golden bullet, so to speak. However, knowing how similar animals are to humans, if you do a little bit of homework, you can find a lot of good solutions that aren't going to cost you as much as at the vet's office. But again, if this is something really serious, get to the vet. Don't pretend to play vet. Don't play doctor. Like, you know, your pet's life could be in danger. So this is for daily care and for simple solutions, not for, you know, huge cardiovascular issues or something like that. So I think that's important to keep that in mind as well.
Sure. And now when you say probiotics, I think, you know, I always think of Jamie Lee Curtis and her like funny yogurt commercials. But what, just so I can get a sense, what do they look like? I mean, do they have like a, is it like a yogurty substance? Is it a powder? Like what is a, when I get it back to my house or when I'm at the grocery store, like where am I going to find this and what is it?
It can be a powder. It can be a liquid. You can find a price range anywhere from $15 a bottle to $120 a bottle, depending on where you are. You always want to get them from the fridge. That's really, really important because probiotics basically produce short-chain fatty acids which inhibit the growth and activity of harmful bacteria, including E. coli, Salmonella, and Clostridium. So it's a good thing to use. The ones in the fridge, you can take them too. I have a kitty person moment every morning where when I make their food, I split one of my probiotics open because I use the powdered form, and I mix that into their food, and then I take one, and everybody's happy. And it's funny too, like when you split your herbs with your pet, they kind of are aware of this, and it becomes almost like a bonding issue. This is something I never expected, but it's kind of like if I forget or something, I get this like, hey, you know, where's ours kind of look. So probiotics are good for everybody. You know, they can even help prevent urinary tract infections, and that's for people and pets. We should all be really taking them, including our pets, because with all the food that we're eating now, it's so processed that we're losing a lot of these good enzymes in our foods. And with factory farming and the quality of grown food reducing in quality and nutrition, probiotics really help to keep the stomach good. And when your gut's healthy, you're healthy.
Got it. All right. Well, moving on from probiotics, what are some other kind of tools we have in our kit?
One of my favorite herbs is slippery elm bark. This also comes in capsule form. You can also get this at your health food store. You can get it online. Slippery elm bark is awesome, and it works for gas, constipation, colitis, gastritis, inflammatory bowel problems, and it works amazingly well for cats with hard stool, even dogs with hard stool. Basically, what it does is it's really, really slick. Slippery elm bark contains mucilage, and that turns into a really slick gel when it's mixed with water. So it really coats, soothes, and lubricates the lining of the digestive tract. It's really, really safe. It works beautifully. You can use it daily. And the trick is, I mean, if you're dealing with something like stomach issues and you're working with herbs, what normally happens is people will start using them, giving them their pets, and after a couple of weeks, everything starts working and it's beautiful, and yay, my pet is healed, and they stop doing it. When you're using herbs and when you're using food supplements, you really need to use them for a minimum of 3 months. Doesn't mean every single day, but you need to use it at that time because it takes the body about 6 months, 3 months to really start healing. Depending on what the issue is with pets, if it's chronic, it could take up to a year with the herb, but about 3 to 6 months. And if you stop, once you stop and you think everything's great, keep some on hand because, you know, once in a while you'll have a bout. Just give it to your pet. I buy this in powdered form in capsules. I'll open up a capsule and give both cats half a capsule. Sometimes a little less. I keep this very, very simple for myself. So I'm not measuring anything. I'm not, you know, weighing anything. They're herbs and it's food based. So if the body can't use it, it's going to release it and it's not going to leave any toxins or any problems.
So that was my thing. I'm wondering, you know, if I have a, you know, 50 pound dog or my little kind of, you know, toy dog, like how am I making an assessment versus, you know, with regards to dosage?
When you buy herbs, when you look at the label, the dosage amount is the recommendation for 150-pound man. I pretty much do it for 150-pound woman as well because in terms of physiology, it gets really, really complicated. And as I said, since they're food-based, you're not going to OD on them and you're not going to get sick. So if you have like a chihuahua who weighs 4 pounds, open up one of these capsules and like a teeny, teeny little pinch will probably do it. And you can experiment a little bit. If you've got a Great Dane that weighs 100 pounds, give them the whole thing. That's fine. It's not going to be a problem. But with all herbs as well, you want to start them a little bit slowly and kind of bring them on. And it's more because of the taste. I mean, animals' smell is like bionic, you know? And so if you add anything to their food immediately, it's kind of dun, dun, dun. what is this? So you got to introduce it slowly. I mean, if somebody was giving me like Slippery Elm or probiotics or anything else and like these huge doses in my soup every night, I'd be like, blah, what is this? So you got to give them time to adjust to it.
Okay, great, great. What's next?
Let's see. Kelp. I love kelp. Kelp is awesome. And for those of you that don't know, kelp is a seaweed. If you've been to the beach in California and you've seen these giant, giant, huge ribbons wash up on the beach, that's kelp. Kelp is a miracle worker for a lot of different things, specifically thyroid health. I blew out my thyroid a couple years ago due to overwork, stress, and not taking good care of myself. And I actually got myself back through a combination of herbal remedies, including kelp. That being said, if you think your pet has a thyroid issue, get to the vet immediately, have blood work done, so at least you have a base to start at. Thyroid disease and thyroid problems is not a death sentence, so if we can catch it quick, we're good. You'll know if your pet has thyroid issues. For cats specifically, if you look at their nails and they're really, really thick, that's absolutely a thyroid definition. Same as the midnight crazies, as I was talking about before, usually that's thyroid. You'll see thyroid reactions as lethargy, a really, really dry coat and skin. Like you pull the coat back and the skin is just like warm and dandery and it just looks dry. A lot of times you'll see loss of hair on the tail as well. However, I'd kind of hate to use that because I had a Vishla growing up that would basically just chew on his tail because it's like sucking his thumb basically. So his thyroid was fine. Another good reaction is if your pet's always freezing. Needless to say, this doesn't count for reptiles. But if your pet's always, always cold, chances are their thyroid isn't working that well. The other reason I love kelp is that if you're gray, this goes for people too, if you're starting to gray, start taking kelp. It'll darken your hair immediately. In fact, I'm a natural blonde, and when I had thyroid problems and was taking kelp, my hair actually turned brown. And you're seeing a lot of dogs and cats that are going gray around the muzzle, like around 5 or 6. And that's basically a malnutrition thing. And so the kelp can help beat that out. Kelp is really, really important too for heart health, especially for large dogs that have a lot of cardiovascular issues. It's extremely high in iron, so it enriches the blood. And when the blood is enriched, it allows the heart to pump more efficiently. So kelp is awesome. It tastes good. Same thing with the capsules. You know, get a capsule. Usually the dose is 2 for a person, so I would do a small pinch and work it up from there. And I also really like kelp because animals do need greens. I mean, dogs and cats do need some greens, and it's a good way to give them a really high-quality green with a lot of nutrients and minerals in it to add it to their diet. And cats tend to like it. Dogs get a little suspicious, so that's why you got to start slow.
Got it. And then what about with regards to are there kind of food or supplement-based treatment options for animals dealing with the trauma issues that we were talking about earlier? I mean, is there a go-to for those types of things?
There are. It really depends on what the trauma is, whether it is physical or emotional. If it's emotional, the Bach flower remedies, which are in pretty much every single health food store at this point, are pretty amazing. And I'm certified in that, as I'd said. And the study of it is absolutely incredible. Basically what it was Dr. Bach, which is the correct pronunciation, but in this country we all call it Bach, was a doctor in the turn of the century in the 1900s in the UK. And he was a very, very famous doctor. And he got into homeopathy and really liked it, except he didn't like the fact that a lot of the plants that are used for it are toxic. So he actually discovered or created this system of 38 different plants, none are toxic, that all work solely on the emotional aspect of people and their pets. And what's really cool about them is that if you release the emotional problems, the physical will get better as well. So you can buy them, like I said, at pretty much any health food store. You can get them online. And the trick with the Bach flowers is if you read them, they're very, like, ridiculously specific. For example, there's four different fear remedies depending on if you're one of these people or animals that's like, I'm fine, everything's good, to sheer terror, peeing, defecating on the floor, that kind of thing, anxiety, fear that everything's going to go wrong. So you really have to take your time and read the labels to find exactly what's going to work for you or your pet. It's also really, really important to realize the fact that you can only give, you shouldn't give, they say you can give up to six. You shouldn't give more than three of these at a time. And the dosage on them is on the bottle. It's the same for people as in pets. You can buy them in glycerin, and you can also buy them in alcohol. The alcohol is so minuscule in it that it won't poison your pet, so you can get away with it. However, in terms of using it, the way that they recommend you use it is that you put two drops on your favorite treat, or your pet's favorite treat, I'm sorry, and tell them that they're remedies. So literally, it's like, kitty, you want your remedies? And then you give them the treat. You do that four times a day. But the good news is it doesn't have to be spaced out perfectly or anything like that. When my pets were on remedies, I'd wake up in the morning, give them their first dose, take my shower, write, get second dose, go to work. Come home, third dose with dinner, fourth dose before bed. So it makes it really, really easy. Like, don't make this hard on yourself, because you need to do this for a while. So if you're going to commit to it, make it as easy as possible for you to make so that it actually happens. You need to use those remedies for, you'll see a slight change in 24 hours if you get the correct remedy. If you get the incorrect remedy, the good news is nothing's going to happen. And we're really talking parts per million here. So for example, one of the remedies is walnut. If you're allergic to walnuts, you're not going to wind up in the hospital, because it's really parts per million, so it's not going to affect you. And they've done lots and lots of tests on this thing. The Bach remedies are really, really fascinating, and there are lots of other flower remedies on the market. I go with Bach because that's who I'm certified and that's who I've trained with, so I really know their product better than the other ones. But the other ones are good too, so I really like flower essences. And I think that they're worth looking into before you start getting into, like, over-the-counter pharmaceuticals. And they're really inexpensive, too. I mean, if you buy a bottle and it doesn't work, you're out $8.
Right.
So I appreciate that a lot.
It's a low barrier to entry. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. But for folks who want to kind of follow up on some of the remedies and solutions you've outlined here, what you know, they can definitely visit your website, www.foodhealer.com. Find you on Twitter.
Yep.
It's @foodhealer. Any other resources that you would direct people towards for further learning or research?
If you have a dog, there's a magazine that comes out called The Whole Dog Journal, and it's good to subscribe to that, because it's tough to find if you don't subscribe. It's amazing. These are some of the top professionals in the dog world. I love them. Their articles are brilliant. Dr. Pitcairn is an incredible holistic vet who has been working with animals for a very, very long time. He has a bunch of books out there as well that I adore. The bad news is if you have a rodent or a rabbit, it's really hard to find really good information on them. So that's when I would start hitting the internet and just researching. And the trick is when you're doing this and you're researching, make sure you check your source and make sure the source is credible, because as we all know, we can all write whatever we want on the internet. So make sure whoever you've got, you really know. If you live in New York City, Whiskers Holistic, which is on 9th Street and 2nd Avenue, is an incredible pet store. Phil and Randy are great people. They've been there for a very long time. They know what they're doing. They have tons of supplements, tons of herbs. Go in, spend some time and talk to Phil, and they'll give you tons of information. And the nice thing is they don't charge you for it.
Awesome. Well, Celia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. This, like all 30 of our live weekly programs, is available for free. You can find us via iTunes, on Stitcher Smart Radio, or visit the website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. We are a member-supported organization, so we hope you'll be compelled to click that Donate tab, become a member today, and then wait anxiously for your tote or t-shirt to arrive in the mail. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.